This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show. Jamie Allman, really, truly honored to be filling in for Jesse Kelly. And this is not unexpected. This is kind of the latest in breaking right now, that there is an oversight project that noticed, and this is a separate brand of and band of investigators, who spotted a paper shredding truck outside of the Justice Department today. The truck's appearance suggests the agency is destroying sensitive paperwork before the Trump administration takes power. And the oversight project posted on X this and said, "Today, a paper shredding truck arrived. We have maintained a physical investigative presence by the Justice Department, which also is more convenient for cooperating sources." And they actually show the paper shredding truck. It's gigantic. And whatever is they're up to, I don't know. But I do know that there are a lot of individuals who are basically freaking out over the idea of President Trump and his cabinet getting access to cabinets. And I'm talking about cabinets of files. So that should be interesting. Pay attention to this, but the paper shredding truck in front of the DOJ is very, very ominous, but not something that is a surprise. All right, you guys might have heard by now of Ryan Walters. He is the Oklahoma State Superintendent. Ryan Walters is a great guy. He's a warrior, and he is also an elected state superintendent. So this is how it goes in certain states. I believe there are only about 13 of them. I'm not quite sure of that. I think that number is something I heard from Ryan Walters' office that elects their school superintendent. And it's really odd to be in a situation where you have an elected school superintendent instead of an appointed one. And the difference is marked. So when you have an elected school superintendent, that person is elected by the people and ultimately is supposedly reflective, I mean, under the perfect world, of the will of the people. An appointed school superintendent oftentimes is just a bureaucratic seedling promoted by the NEA, and that person gets appointed. Even some conservative governors have appointed these nut job NEA people. Or, if anything, appointed superintendents who don't seem to care enough. So they just kind of stand on the sidelines and don't do enough and just sit there and keep quiet. Ryan Walters does not keep quiet. And he has just announced that the state, and by the way, Oklahoma, it was the only state in the country that was all red. Not one county in Oklahoma was blue, not one. So kudos to Oklahoma. Good job, Oklahoma. Ryan Walters decided he was going to make an announcement about some new things he is bringing into the school system.
I'm excited to announce today that Oklahoma is the first state to bring the Bible back to the classroom. Today, we purchased over 500 Bibles that will be in the AP government classrooms across the state. Bible just like this. We have the Bible, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights. These are foundational documents in our nation's history. Our kids have to understand the role the Bible played in influencing American history. It's very clear that the radical left has driven the Bible out of the classroom, which leads to a lack of understanding of American history. We will not stop until we've brought the Bible back to every classroom in the state.
Wow, that's pretty gutsy. Now, as more of a libertarian than anything else, I've always been very concerned about, for instance, bringing back prayer in school, in public schools at least. I send my kids to religious schools, and so religion in those schools is taught by teachers and everybody else who are there because of their religious teaching credentials. So I have no problem with that. In the public school system, it's a little different. Sometimes I am concerned a little bit by the fact that you bring prayer back in school, just wait until the NEA nut job teachers start to edit the prayers or add things to the prayers or create their own prayers. I mean, you've seen it. All you have to do is go to Libs of TikTok and you'll see how many teachers ran amok in the run-up to the Trump election and then ran amok in the aftermath of the Trump election. And so I've had some concerns about that because you never know whether or not the handling of this kind of material is a good thing in the hands of people who would otherwise bastardize it. People who are not actually aware enough or smart enough to handle the kind of heavy machinery that goes along with religion. The Bible is another story, in my estimation, because first of all, even if you don't believe in God or you're not a particularly religious person, the Bible is a masterpiece of history and drama. And because the Bible, and Ryan Walters gets this right about it too, because the Bible has been an intricate part of many amazing developments, and sometimes not so amazing, I don't know, in history, and presents the backdrop to many movements, many breakthroughs, and of course, as he points out, even the Declaration of Independence and that kind of thing, it is actually a totally and completely appropriate item to have in your classrooms. Now, whether or not someone who is going to be teaching the Bible as a book or as an influencer, I mean, let's face it, people read Greek mythology, kids read Greek mythology, they even read things like Moby Dick and Raisin in the Sun and all these books that basically are part of the fabric of our society, and To Kill a Mockingbird, which I dreaded reading, but yeah. But they're still important pieces of literature that actually had influence on people and are worthy of consideration in a historical context. I would even take it further and say that they have a place in a literature environment, in an English class, which would be great, because I'm telling you, the characters in the Bible, the drama in the Bible is nothing short of amazing. Even if you don't do the God thing, the Bible is indeed an incredible masterpiece and should not be separated from our youth, from young people, only because religions use it. And so I think he raises a good point. I'd be a little concerned about some of the people handling this gem, because you never know how they are going to bastardize that, much like they would bastardize a prayer. But it seems like a good development if it's put in a context that is not shoving it down your throat. I wouldn't even be opposed if you're going to go ahead and do a historical, contextual type of class. Why not get the Torah in there and even the Quran in there, for crying out loud, and put them all together? But you got to have somebody who is going to be smart and not a biased crazy. And that's the biggest challenge that Ryan Walters has in introducing the Bible. Now, Walters, though, has been now roundly criticized. Of course, the cable news people have him on and decide they're going to try to rake him over the coals as some kind of religious zealot, when he clearly pointed out that the Bible does have an important historical context that must be learned. Check this out. On the other side of this, you're going to hear an anchor try to go after him who has no idea what even separation of church and state is. So I'll have that for you on the other side here. This is the Jesse Kelly Show, and I'm Jamie Allman. Glad to be with you. This is the Jesse Kelly Show. Jamie Allman here, pleased to be with you. And speaking of the Bible, just as a little side piece here, there is a Bible that now is encased in this plastic in North Carolina because the Bible was found sticking on a post after Hurricane Helene came through. And the Bible was opened to Revelation chapters 14 and 15. And they found this thing on the post and they decided to enshrine it.
So this Bible was found after the flood from Hurricane Helene.
On this fence post.
And it is on Revelation 14 and 15.
Of all the things destroyed, that was left open. And it's sitting there, and we're not touching it. So
this house was buried and flooded all the way to the roof originally. The man that lived here had to be rescued off of the roof by a raft. And they were just emptying it, just demoing the entire house. And this Bible was found on a pole, open to Revelation.
Yeah, I'll buy that. And, you know, what's interesting, too, is that this isn't the first time that's happened. I mean, it does happen. And maybe somebody put it up there and opened it to Revelation. Who knows? But still, it's pretty cool. And I do have anecdotal evidence that these kinds of things have happened before. Because I'll never forget, as a young guy, I used to love listening to Paul Harvey. Paul Harvey, good day. And he would, page two. And we listened to Paul Harvey because I was in journalism at the time. And so Paul Harvey was an excellent writer and a broadcaster. So he knew how to write crisply and quickly. And he didn't use a whole lot of commas and parentheses and things like that. And he was a good standard bearer of really fine, solid type of news type of broadcasting. And I'll never forget, he did a story, because he always did the, it's called a kicker, so it's supposed to be the thing you do at the end and makes everybody feel good and that kind of thing. It's where you get, like, for instance, in TV, you get the skiing squirrel and things like that. And so, I'll never forget this, because I thought it was really pretty funny, just the way he put it. But anyway, it was after another weather event, and he told a story about this house being basically destroyed, except for one wall remaining up. And on that wall was a picture of Jesus. Good day. And that was it. That was fantastic. So it does happen. These phenomena do happen. All right, back to the Bible in the Oklahoma schools. So he goes on with this nitwit named Pamela Brown. She's a left-wing kook on CNN. And she decides she's going to kind of go after him. And, of course, Normally in journalistic interviews, you ask somebody a question, you do this. You're really not supposed to be the person responsible for debating the guy over the merits of it. You just ask him, so why'd you do this? So what is this? What about the people who say this? Instead, she sits there. She might as well have had a rolling pin in her hand and browbeats him over his decision to infuse these Bibles in the AP history classes, and here's how it goes.
On religious liberty, the Constitution's crystal clear on religious liberty. I know the left doesn't want our kids to know anything about the role the Bible played in American history. They don't want any of our kids to know about the Constitution. Our religious liberties are protected, and the left has driven the Bible out of schools, driven prayer out of schools, and everything in education's gotten worse since. Before we had a federal Department of Education and we had the Bible and prayer in school, guess what? We were leading the free world. This was the greatest country in the world, and we have seen every statistic has gotten worse since the creation of the Federal Department of Education and the Supreme Court pulled the Bible and prayer out of schools. President Trump has won on this issue. He has a crystal clear mandate. It's what Americans want. It's what Oklahomans want.
And actually, Ryan Walters won on the issue as well, because he was is an elected state superintendent of schools, which I heartily endorse for every state to adopt the concept of the elected school superintendent.
So we're going to deliver on those on President Trump's promises here in Oklahoma.
All right. First of all, the Constitution is not crystal clear on that. It doesn't have God in it. There is this establishment clause in the First Amendment, which the Supreme Court has routinely said it requires the separation of church and state and public schools. There are many cases.
And this is where the dimwit comes out in Pamela Brown, and this is a common mistake, and how she gets to the level of being a journalist in this situation, probably highly paid, and not have a clue about what the separation of church and state really is. In fact, there are a lot of people out there who confuse the separation of church and state with a demand that God or religion come nowhere near the public square or the public schools. And they miss the fact that Thomas Jefferson, in his letter to the Baptist Church, the concern was the establishment of a state religion and the fact that there's a possibility the government would then be involved in religious activities. The separation of church and state was solely designed to keep the government out of religion, not keep the religion out of government. Not keep the religion out of public square. It's very simple. And even though there really isn't the letter in the Constitution, it's part of the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. So if anything, even Walter's decision as a political figure, as well as the leader of the Oklahoma public school system, absolutely is nowhere near violating the concept of the separation of church and state, specifically, and of course, you know he's consulted people on this, he's not an idiot, specifically designing the book, the Bible, as a historical piece, as opposed to necessarily a religious piece designed to convert students or do whatever. It's going to be in a historical context, in a classroom. And it also happens to be his prerogative as a public figure and a public representative. And this idea somehow this is some violation of the separation of church and state, it absolutely is not. And Dimwit doesn't know what the concept of separation of church and state is. All right, they're still going after the cabinet appointees. We'll have more on that. This is the Jesse Kelly Show, and I'm Jamie Allman.
Feeling a little stocky? Follow, like, and subscribe on social at Jesse Kelly DC.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show. Jamie Allman here, pleased and privileged to be with you, filling in. And yeah, things are getting kind of silly. There is a woman now all over the internet saying that she wants Elon Musk's Martian baby. So presumably she wants to go up to Mars with Elon Musk and procreate and have Elon Musk's Martian baby. So it takes all kinds. It's a new frontier. And, of course, Elon Musk being part of the president's expanding cabinet, so to speak, even though they have the job that might not be necessarily the cabinet position, but it is still a position in the government. And he and they're going to do great. And Vivek are going to do fantastically. But anyway, there's somebody hunting for you there, Elon. They want to have your Martian baby. So be prepared. All right, you all know a operation. You've probably been there before at the website Politico.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Would you guys consider anything less than a championship to be a failure from this year?
I wouldn't say anything is a failure, especially because we all grow every day. Obviously, the goal is a championship. There's no doubt in that, and that's the goal. We want to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
For all the biggest stories in women's basketball, plus exclusive interviews with the game's brightest stars.
So to be here, I think it's one that we definitely don't take for granted. But we also know, you know, that's just one stop along the way, and we're hoping to, you know, make a run.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So Politico is one of those news organizations like Axios. Axios came out of nowhere during the 2016 election and became kind of like this news operation that nobody really knew anything about. They just kind of appeared out of nowhere. It's kind of like the Drudge Report, where although at least at the Axios, they had names attached to the articles and that kind of thing. But it had, you know, some financial backing by some nefarious figures and really was there to push and aggregate anti-Trump, anti-conservative, anti-common sense propaganda. Politico is similar in that way. Politico kind of comes across as this innocuous, non-biased reporting agency, but we all know what the truth is. These guys who hide behind this idea that they're balanced individuals and they mean no harm, no nothing. But every once in a while, things will come out and they will slip. And so you all know Sean Duffy, probably from Fox News or what have you, but you certainly don't know him. I know I don't know him as a reality TV star. And so Politico decides they're going to do this article, and this is part of this ongoing campaign against President Trump's cabinet appointees. It's really designed to basically re-prosecute the 2024 election through adversarial actions towards the cabinet appointees. So basically, instead of, and we all know that the enumerated powers of the Constitution afford the executive branch wide breadth in the choice of cabinet members. It's kind of one of the reasons why Lincoln was able to get Democrat and defense secretary as war guy Stanton, who turned out to be a disaster, but it was an effort to unify the country and all that kind of thing. So Trump's appointees are being treated basically like they're Supreme Court nominees. You know, I understand that Gates has some things to answer. He was exonerated. I think that he might be a troubled choice if the Republicans have their way, who are also Thune and Lindsey Graham and Murkowski and Susan Collins and all these people who actually didn't help Donald Trump. They weren't there for him. And yet now are acting like the country voted to make John Thune great again and Susan Collins great again. No, not exactly. So they have this newfound relevance. But generally, there's a wide breadth of allowability of cabinet appointees, unless someone is, you know, downright crazy. Last time a cabinet appointee was rejected was back during HW's time, and it was John Tower. But before that, I think he had to go back to Coolidge or something. And it's rare that cabinet appointees are rejected unless there's something really crazy. At that point, during HW's time, it was John Tower was a womanizer and a drinker and all that kind of stuff. I'm like, well, welcome to Washington, for crying out loud. So anyway, the Politico people decide that they're going to have this article here, and it says President-elect Donald Trump's transition effort is continuing to churn through potential picks for the next head of the Transportation Department, with the current crop of names including a former reality TV star. And most people are thinking, who are you talking about? Oh, well, we're talking about Sean Duffy. I'm like, wait a minute. Sean Duffy was an assistant district attorney in Wisconsin for 8 years and a member of Congress for 8 years representing Wisconsin. And Politico calls him a former reality TV star. It's just unbelievable. And now, of course, the news media is going on an all-out war against President Trump's choices. Not only, and we'll get to Pete Hegseth in a bit here. I know that Jesse's talked about it, but ABC and CBS apparently are now clutching their pearls over the Energy Department cabinet appointee and the FCC. So they're finding any way to disagree on something so much as the Energy Department and the FCC. Now, remember when Pete Buttigieg, who had no experience at all in transportation, was named transportation secretary, you didn't see a whole lot of the face fanning and pearl clutching that you see with the news media on something so small as the Energy Department or whatever. But of course, you also didn't have President Trump's very consequential policy changes that he's going to be instituting and he wants to institute. But yeah, here's ABC
is making it clear he plans to overhaul government agencies, tasking billionaire confidant Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy to lead a newly created Department of Government Efficiency.
Yeah, and so now the news media, of course, is in the mode of defending government agencies. Now that's the how times have changed, you know, since the days when reporters and journalists were adversarial and were not individuals who worshipped institutions and worshipped the deep state and beyond.
We expect certain agencies to be deleted outright. We expect mass reductions in force in areas of the federal government that are bloated. We expect massive cuts among federal contractors and others who are overbilling the federal government.
Ramaswamy and Musk there by Trump's side at the fight this weekend. So, too, is his pick for Energy Secretary Chris Wright, one of the nation's top fracking CEOs. Wright has fiercely criticized the existence of a climate crisis.
There is no climate crisis, and we're not in the midst of an energy transition.
So, by the way, it's interesting the use of words that reporters use. And the reporter said that he criticized the climate crisis. Which is actually not what he's doing. He's doubting there is one.
Crisis.
There is no climate crisis.
Chris Wright, one of the nation's top fracking CEOs, Wright has fiercely criticized the existence of a climate crisis.
Okay, so the reporter is stating as fact that a climate crisis exists. And so, man, I tell you, I've done it my whole life. I've been a TV reporter, radio reporter, you name it. And I've seen people sitting there like a bunch of lawyers crafting their reports in ways that you can't possibly imagine, and sometimes in ways that you would not be able to catch just as a layperson who's never been in the broadcast business. This stuff jumps out to me right away when she says that he criticized the existence of a climate crisis. No, he doubted the reality of people claiming there's a climate crisis. He doubted it, but he didn't criticize the existence of it because we are not sure and we do not know that a climate crisis exists. So that's the TV people basically stating as a matter of fact that there's a climate crisis.
There is no climate crisis. And we're not in the midst of an energy transition either.
Wright, who has no government experience, has argued the impacts of climate change are overblown. But scientists agree humans are causing global warming and climate change.
That's actually not true. Scientists do not agree on that. Maybe scientists that are read by ABC News, but scientists do not agree. And that's irresponsible and lazy reporting. When you state as a matter of fact something to scientists, like who are they? Name all of them, and then name the people who don't agree. But that's the kind of reporting you're getting. Wait till you hear more. This Pete Hegseth, defense secretary appointee, this smear job just continues to get more fierce by the day. I'll have more on that as we crap the BS here at the Jesse Kelly Show. I'm Jamie Allman.
Jesse Kelly returns next.
You're listening to the Jesse Kelly Show. Jamie Allman here. Super excited and honored to be filling in for Jesse Kelly. And, you know, some people might find it annoying because I happen to be, and actually they do find it annoying, because I happen to be a little more pedantic about watching the news than other people might be, because that's why my 96-year-old mother, she watches all the mainstream news, and when I'm sitting with her, all I do is scream at the TV, and it's not very pleasant. I don't really scream at it, but you know what I mean? I'm always correcting them and trying to make sure she's getting the right information as opposed to the baloney information, but she still watches that in PBS NewsHour, and like, oh, lordy. So anyway, words matter, and the way the news media just absolutely propagandizes through its lawyerly way of putting words together is just outrageous and unacceptable. And the only good part about all this is that one thing the Trump election proved in the end is that very few people are getting their news from these places, but they still have an impact on people, because guess what? All these nutty Republicans watch these news programs because they appear on them. So they still, these news organizations still have a place in Washington and among some influencers, but not among the normal, average, everyday people who just assume that they're lying to them. So this is ABC's Mary Bruce, and this is on Good Morning America, and this is the target, Pete Hegseth, who is a decorated war veteran, great guy, and he's getting hammered over this Jerusalem cross tattoo. They're getting to the point where they're even analyzing his tattoos and, of course, getting it all wrong, because as we all know, the Jerusalem cross, well, you could pretty much find it on Bibles, on grandma's necklace, as one person on X discovered, and pretty much everywhere. Even on one priest put it up, he has it on his wrist. And so the Jerusalem cross is a well-known symbol of religiosity, and it has nothing to do with white supremacy. Unless, of course, the white supremacists decide they're going to use it in their white supremacy, but that doesn't make it a white supremacist symbol any more than Hitler holding a Coca-Cola would make Coca-Cola a Nazi beverage. You know what I mean? So anyway, this is Mary Bruce. Listen to this.
Hegseth is also under fire for some of his tattoos to pick.
Right out of the blocks, we get this one. He's not under fire. He's under fire by the news media and all of the idiots on X, but he's not under fire. And in fact, do we have to beg for any kind of precision from the news media to say, hey, so who is he under fire by? Other than people in your newsroom and the people you text with.
Religious symbols and phrases the fellow service members flagged to his superiors over concerns they're associated with white supremacists.
Yeah, well, those fellow service people are idiots. They don't understand the Jerusalem cross any more than these bozos in the news media do. Just because some fellow service members like, I think that's a white supremacy symbol, doesn't mean that they're right about it. I mean, just because you stare like the dog into the Victrola cone because you don't understand a symbol or a tattoo doesn't make it right. Oh, his fellow service members complain. Well, maybe they're just as dumb as Mary Bruce.
Hegseth saying those concerns amount to anti-Christian bigotry, posting, they can target me, I don't give a damn. But this type of targeting of Christians, conservatives, patriots, and everyday Americans will stop on day one at Donald Trump's Department of Defense. Hegseth's post notably not disavowing the supremacists who have adopted the symbol.
Yeah, so apparently now it's Pete Hegseth's job
to disavow a symbol that has been adopted and bastardized by some group of kooks who just happen to be using it. So it's Pete Hegseth's job to take the co-opting of a clearly a religious symbol, and you talk about cultural appropriation. Just because some nut job white supremacist starts to use it on their literature, does it make it a symbol of white supremacy? It makes it a symbol that is bastardized and co-opted by the white supremacists. So they're going nuts over this, and it doesn't stop there at ABC. Here's NBC.
So, Ali, also Hegseth has been a vocal critic of the deadly U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. And now there are reports that the incoming Trump administration could punish the military officials involved in that pullout. What more can you tell us?
Yeah, that's right. NBC News has learned that members of the transition team are compiling a list of current and former military personnel.
Yeah, you're damn right they are, and they should. You know, anytime you have a new management team, which is what the United States of America does, and the new management team is also part of the new management at the Pentagon and beyond, you go in and you figure out the people who have done poor jobs, bad jobs, made bad decisions. I'll talk about Jesse's favorite restaurant, Red Lobster. Well, you know what happened there? You know what they did? They went ahead and they had a all-you-can-eat crab leg event. It was the dumbest idea in the world because people who go to Red Lobster are people who will eat the place out of house and home. They'll put crab legs down their skirts because they're good. They're delicious. Well, then they came back and did the all-you-can-eat shrimp. And so eventually they basically bankrupted Red Lobster. Well, I guarantee you the new administration of Red Lobster is going in and saying, hey, who made that decision to have the all-you-can-eat crab leg thing that bankrupted us? It's not dissimilar in government. You do the same darn thing. And I'm glad that they're getting to the bottom of it, but there's no quarter given to anybody who is associated with Donald J. Trump. But the good news is we're on our way, and nobody really cares about what the news media has to say all the time. Chris Little, thanks so much. Corey, thank you as well. Jesse Kelly, thank you for the privilege filling in for you. You guys have a great rest of your days. I'm Jamie Allman, happy to have been with you.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations, thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.